I'm very happy now to welcome artist Don Cannell. He is a sculptor, and his monumental blue gorilla is here in Santa Fe. And in fact, today is the last day that you can see it before it goes to the Philadelphia Zoo. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
And Janine Stern is here. She's director of Janine Contemporary Industry Gallery. She is an artist as well. Welcome, Janine.
Well, thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So, Don, let's talk about your work for a while. You do, among other things, monumental scale animals, including this blue gorilla. How did you start doing that?
You know, I've always been inspired by animals. I just I find that they're inspiring on all kinds of levels. Their physical forms, their kind of mythological history, their deep connection with human beings, and I find that they're very accessible for an audience. I find that people today really relate to animals, and so it's just been a great vehicle for me as an artist.
And this blue gorilla, which, by the way, is on Guadalupe Street, if you go up Cerrillos and turn onto Guadalupe across from the gas station in the park right there, kind of across from Whole Foods, is this massive, very gorilla-like, sort of beautiful, strange sculpture. How did this particular one come into being?
The Philadelphia Zoo has an exhibition that's opening April 10th called Second Nature. And it's an exhibition of artists that work with recycled materials. And they put out a call for entries, and I submitted and was asked to participate. And the exhibition is tied to a campaign the zoo has to raise awareness about climate change and habitat loss. And each year they focus on a particular species, and this year it's the lowland gorilla. And so when they reached out to me, they said that we would really like you to consider doing a gorilla, which was a bit of a reach for me. The gorillas were not an animal that particularly inspired me. When I started to do research, I found them kind of scary and ominous, and I didn't quite see it. But I stuck with it, and I'm really glad I did, because the piece has been a real kind of watershed piece for me.
What do you mean?
Well, one is it's a gorilla from Africa, and so I've started to think more broadly about how our habits here affect animals all over the world. And also, I've been wanting to use the gorilla is made out of automobile sheet metal. We gathered 44 hoods from local junkyards and stripped them down and used them to skin the armature. And this is a material that I've wanted to work with for a long time, and it finally became, this was the opportunity to do that. And I'm just really, really excited about this material. It has a real luscious quality. It plays with light. It's something that people kind of recognize when they get next to it. They're like, oh, wow, this is made out of car parts. And so it just has these connections on all these different levels, and I'm just really excited about doing more work in the future with this material.
When you say, okay, I'm going to build a giant, much larger than life-size gorilla, how do you get the kind of the feel of the gorilla, of the animal?
Well, you do a lot of research. You do some preparatory drawings. I mean, I've been doing these large-scale animals for quite a while now, so that helps, too. You have to kind of just jump off the cliff and hope that you can fly, and eventually you get better at it. But there are also sort of tried-and-true techniques for enlarging things. I do a clay model. And then we scale it up. So there's a lot of measuring and using tape measures and things like that to get the scale right, to get proportions right.
I guess what I'm thinking about is the feel of the gorilla, the gesture, the kind of, you know, you're animating automobile sheet metal into a primate.
Well, I have to admit, it wasn't a sure thing. You know, we built the armature and we were about ready to start skinning it, and we were all like, well, boy, I hope this works. And it was a little dicey for a while because it was a new material for me. I hadn't worked with it. But there's a certain combination of sort of willpower and experience and trust that go into it. And if you can bring all those elements together and stay focused over a long period of time, you know, we worked on that for almost 3 months, and it is sort of about going into the studio every day with that sense of focus, like we have to make this thing feel alive, we have to make it feel inviting. We believe in the message that is embodied in it, and you know, we want to make that a reality. And so it's a lot of focus.
Did you fall in love with gorillas?
I did. I really did. I mean, this, like I said, this project was such a revelation for me, and I feel so grateful to the zoo for just kind of holding me to it. Because I think it does come across as this kind of compassionate thing. And, you know, there was this contest in the local elementary schools to name it. And the Ezequiel Madri elementary class came up with the winning name Zubachi. And the name sort of, it's this kind of Japanese amalgam that means sort of quiet countenance that wants to be treated with respect. And it was such a beautiful kind of dovetail with what the project was trying to do, you know, trying to get people to connect with these animals in this distant continent and realize that, yeah, we are all connected.
So the blue gorilla has been sitting in Santa Fe for a while, and after today, it'll be on its way to the Philadelphia Zoo, where it will be then permanently installed.
No, it's the exhibition at the zoo is just for 9 months.
Ah, they're not going to keep it after that?
Not that I know of. At the exhibition, all the works will be for sale. We'll see what happens. It's in Philadelphia for 9 months, and I get it back in January 2016.
Ah, that's interesting. So then you've got a very large gorilla on your hands.
It becomes a bit of a joke, doesn't it? There's a 1,500-pound gorilla in the room.
Literally. What do you do? I mean, is there a market for, I mean, maybe this is a question for Janine as a gallerator, is there a market for gigantic animal sculptures like this?
Yes, I'm very prepared to have a blue gorilla up for sale. Actually, there are collectors out there. There are corporations, there are public parks, there are many, many venues for a home for a blue gorilla. And I want to thank Don. You're so articulate on the concept and how you put the piece together. It's so defining to hear that the dealing with issues about the world and our economy and how we treat people and how we treat and respect animals. And you just put everything together in a very concise, beautiful way. And when I first saw the blue gorilla, my first impression and my first thing that I said to myself was, this is significant. And I believe that if public art is done well, it is significant and has power to the people, because public art reaches people. Not everyone walks into a gallery. Our national monuments, public art works that change our lives, children's lives. And it is definitely, and I said, this is decorative ingenuity at its best. And I could tell from a distance that the application, the construction, the engineering of the piece was very thought out and created by an artist of great talent.
Thank you, Janine.
You're quite welcome.
I mean, the engineering has got to be a huge part of it. I've seen some of your other sculptures where not only have you built a gigantic animal, but that gigantic animal is holding a swing in which people can actually sit down and swing. And, for example, there's a couple of a roadrunner who's holding the swing in its beak. That's got to be a feat of engineering to hold that thing up.
Well, that project I did, I actually worked with a structural engineer, Jim Hands, here in town, who spec'd out all the materials because, yeah, that piece had a porch swing that could hold 2,000 pounds worth of humanity, and it was destined to go to the Coachella Music Festival, and I knew that when it was there that it would be packed with young people and they would swing it as far as they could swing it for as long as they could. And so I told Jim, I need 2,000 pounds to swing on a 14-foot arc and tell me how to build that. And so he did. He's a great guy to work with. He loves working with artists. And so that stuff, yeah, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's because the last thing an artist needs is for a public project to fail.
Yeah, for the swing to fall down with.
Absolutely. No, it has to be 100% safe and sort of idiot-proof.
Now, you do quite a bit for the Coachella Music Festival.
I'm doing a project now. This will be my third year going out there, and they've just been just a wonderful institution to work for. It's a huge audience. They're very serious about supporting new works, new artworks, visual art. It's a big part of the festival. And I've done big pieces for me, but they are some of the smallest pieces at Coachella.
Is that right?
Yeah, 35-foot Roadrunner is just a drop in the bucket.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
And a 20-foot bear is... The bear that I'm working on now will be one of the smaller projects at Coachella.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, you're also doing other work here in Santa Fe. One of the things that I find very interesting is transforming dumpsters into little parks with plantings and benches and stuff like that.
This summer, I was approached by Mix Santa Fe to do a project that they had. They got a grant from PNM to do a series of mobile parklets, and their plan was to take 20-yard construction dumpsters and turn them into mini parks, mini mobile parks. And I was asked to do the first one. Mix has been involved with trying to revitalize the St. Michael's area. That's where my studio is. And I worked with landscape designer Christy Green, who is also in the neighborhood, and we built the Love Transfer Station. We got a fairly decrepit old construction dumpster from the city of Santa Fe, and we worked with some kids from YouthWorks who sort of apprenticed with me. And we transformed this dumpster into a mobile park that's now on Llano Street, just up from DeVargas Middle School. I feel like the park hasn't really had its moment in the sun because it's been the plantings that Christy did have been dormant all winter. But this spring, we're really looking for it to come alive. She's planted all these plants that sort of have connections to love or food. You know, there's strawberries, there's crab apples and white roses and switchgrass, and so there's a little bit there for everybody.
Very, very interesting. Okay. We're talking to artist Don Cannell and Janine Stern, who's director of the Janine Contemporary Gallery and also an artist. And I find it fascinating, Janine, that you have a not only an interest in art that can fit in a gallery, but also public art. Tell us about your own background in public art.
I started, my career is based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Once I received my art degree from the University of Pittsburgh, I hit the bricks. I had a voice, and I was ready to put it out there. And my artworks started to reflect abandonment, areas that were neglected, such as old gas stations, primarily steel mills, old hotels, and that became a body of work that I continue to explore and investigate today. And it's interesting, being an artist back in Pittsburgh, I became very interested in public art, and I created a nonprofit organization called the Times Project. And it was a very significant part of the fabric of the city of Pittsburgh. I I found it fascinating, being an artist, that you could actually find money from corporations, from the Howard Hines Endowment, the Pennsylvania Council for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Arts. They were willing to give money to organizations to promote artists. The Times Project was allowing artists to have a greater voice in the progress of their city. It was also very much involved in urban revitalization. I would find areas very similar to what Don was doing with the urban park. Carnegie Museum of Art, right across the street, was a empty field, filled with trash and homeless. And I'm like, this needs to be a park. So within that, we commissioned artists to do murals and plantings and benches and sculptures. And it actually became a very nice place where the homeless could actually hang out and feel respected. I believe that my art, being very consumed with the leftover pieces of life, which are very evident today in our world, as I drive through small towns in New Mexico, boarded up buildings, boarded up gas stations, empty, gone. Jane's Bridal Shop, that's all you see are signs. A history is gone. Only history left are signs of what was once. And then taking that feeling of this was something very significant and putting it into something that can change people's life. Public art became a very great purpose for me because it allowed me to work with education, with other nonprofits, with corporations, funding, city, state, and public art is very complicated. You need to have permits. You need to make things that are very safe. You need to have a very good piece of art that the public can respect and not destroy. And I wish that there would be more organizations and ways for artists like Dawn to change the way we see these empty buildings, streets, environments.
Well, and public space in general. I mean, I think public space is about civic life and public speech. Mm-hmm. And these are very important things, I think, especially in this day and age, you know, with sort of corporate takeover where things take money. You know, we see more and more advertising and less art, less and less kind of civic space, civic dialogue. I think this, you know, the idea of a public space has deep roots in this country and very important roots, and they're very much about sort of people coming together, having space to voice their concerns, to live their lives, and I think public art plays that a role in that, you know, of creating a space, creating a sort of an anchor for people to gather and to remind ourselves that, you know, we are in the driver's seat.
It's a very important concept. It's very important to think about because so much of what feels like public space in our world really isn't. So many people use Facebook as a forum. That's a corporation. So many people use restaurants, which is a great thing, you know, cafes to talk. Those are privately owned businesses. The existence of real public space to talk about ideas and to gather is, I mean, I think it's fundamental to democracy.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you saw that so clearly in the Occupy movement, you know, where all over the country, citizens were gathering in public space here in Santa Fe. I mean, I thought it was so brilliant that the Rail Yard Park became a laboratory for a little while about free speech and democracy. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful thing.
And when public space is, in fact, beautiful, you're more likely to want to gather in it.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
Yes, for sure.
Very interesting. So we're talking to Janine Stern and Don Cannell about public art, about giant gorillas, about galleries. Now, you have a gallery that just moved to Montezuma Street here in Santa Fe, near Guadalupe, and you're having an opening this coming Friday night.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
I have a gallery, and we have a grand opening Friday, March 20th from 6 to 9. We have a great lineup of artists. We are featuring Dawn, and we have another artist, Bill Mitchell, who will be displaying a video kaleidoscope of color, light, and rhythm, which will actually be projected onto the outside of the gallery. So
kind of after sunset.
Yes. It actually runs every night. So when you're leaving the Jean Cocteau Theater and you walk by the gallery,
you look across the street and it's right there.
Yes. You can actually experience visual art in a very dynamic way. And it's great to, I have since moved out of the nonprofit sector and into the commercial sector of running a gallery. And I can thank individuals here in the city that helped me to create a very, I think, contemporary, cosmopolitan space with some of the best artists in the country. And when I moved from Pittsburgh, Santa Fe was always somewhere over the rainbow. And when I moved here, this is a destination. This is a place where artists of world-class talent live and work. And when I found Dawn, it just reaffirmed that they're here. And if you are an artist, this is a place where you can make your mark. And if you do it well, then you know that you've achieved something, because Santa Fe is one of the top art destinations in the world.
And the Rail Yard is now becoming one of the top art neighborhoods in Santa Fe.
Yes, and what is wonderful, I was actually on Canyon Road for quite some time, Canyon Road being a historic district and the Rail Yard being a historic district. Canyon Road, charm, and the Rail Yard District, a little more cosmopolitan. So it's a nice way to move around the city, but still be in that hub of great talent and energy.
So the Janine Contemporary Industry Gallery is across the street from the Jean Cocteau Movie Theater, right on Montezuma, in that same complex, sort of where the Zia Diner is and, mm-hmm. and all of that. And Don, you've got some work there that is not monumental scale, that's very human scale. Like, I love these chairs made out of entirely stuffed animals. Right. I had to restrain myself. I did not sit on the art. Is it a chair to be sat on?
It is. They're actually very durable because, of course, stuffed animals are mostly made out of polyester, and so that's almost an indestructible fabric. And I've been doing these stuffed animal chairs for a few years now, and I started with doing them for the recycled show here in Santa Fe. I'm so glad that Janine has one in the gallery. People just love them. They're you know, everybody has I think a connection to this material, and it's fun, and yet there's for me as an artist, there's also an undercurrent of content. And you know, it speaks about our kind of throwaway society and the consumerism that gives us so many stuffed animals. But it's great mm-hmm. to be able to kind of turn it around and collect them and make something that brings a lot of joy to people.
I was thinking if my dogs saw that chair, they'd go bananas.
It's very hard making them around my dog. She sort of sits there and watches me sew them together, and she's like, oh no, not another one. Come on, how about one for me?
Now, Janine, you're also showing your own work in the gallery?
Yes, I am.
Drawings and paintings?
Yes. My primary medium is Prismacolor. Pencils, many, many layers. I started working on a very indestructible material known as roofing paper, the paper that you put on your roof of your house.
Yeah, it sounds pretty indestructible.
Wow. Yes. However, I found out after years in getting into museum collections, it is not archival. However, I was able to simulate roofing paper by taking heavy artist paper, gessoing it black, and it has that kind of sensual quality that you can never reproduce with roofing paper, but it is similar. And I have really, I think there's real, that's one of the things probably that set me apart, my media. Not a lot of artists working on black, especially roofing paper and many layers of pencil. And they actually are deceiving because a lot of people, when they look at them, they actually believe or think that they are paintings. And
yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, so yeah. It's a kind of, I guess my invention is I maybe will have to move into putting pencil on hoods of automobiles. You never know.
I didn't know you could get black gesso.
You can get black gesso, yes.
Wow,
and so now the work is archival, and I'm still, right now, my new series will be taking that abandonment issue and using the old Las Vegas signs that were so amazing and artistic, and now they're just sitting on their sides in a graveyard in a fenced lot in Las Vegas, Nevada. And they will allow you to photograph them for a small fee. And then I work from photographs, so I'm also a photorealist. And that is where I plan to spend the next few months in the gallery working on car hoods, painted black.
Janine Contemporary Industry Gallery is on the web at janinecontemporary.com, and we'll link to that at santafe.radiocafe.org. I want to thank you both so much, Don Cannell and Janine Stern, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank
it's been
you
great.
Very much.
Oh, and by the way, Don Cannell's website is also doncannell.com, and we'll link to that as well.
Thank you.